In The Shadows, where psychological horror meets dark romance, Phobia plunges us into the disturbed mind of a young woman whose trauma has rewired her perception of danger and desire. Bright Horizons isn't just a school, it's a sanctuary for the broken, a place where trauma-informed education supposedly helps students heal. Yet for our protagonist, this promise rings hollow as she stands frozen at the edge of the school's indoor pool, paralyzed by memories of her mother trying to drown her. The water before her isn't just water, it's a portal back to that horrific night, triggering hallucinations of a faceless entity she calls Shadow Man emerging from blood-red depths. When she screams and collapses, she discovers she's been clawing at her own arm. The blood real, but self-inflicted. This powerful moment establishes the central question. When your mind betrays you, how can you trust what you see or feel? Her therapist insists Shadow Man is merely her mind's way of processing trauma. But she knows what she witnessed that night, even if the figure's face remains a blank in her memory. What happens when the monsters in your mind make it impossible to recognize the real ones walking among you?
The nightmare begins with a seemingly innocent plan, fake IDs for a night out. Though reluctant to risk her place at Bright Horizons, our protagonist agrees to just have drinks in the dorm. This plan dissolves when Marissa unexpectedly drives to the Big Angus Tavern, with the G burned out, foreshadowing the darkness ahead. In the dim bar, Mr. Kayed's appearance creates immediate tension. When college guys approach, Marissa's blunt question about conversation or sex reveals her recklessness, while the dark-haired guy's admission he's looking to get laid signals danger. The situation deteriorates when Marissa disappears with her dance partner, leaving our protagonist with Jordan. After finding Marissa performing oral sex behind the dumpster, she storms off alone, a critical mistake. Waiting by the car, she grows dizzy and collapses as a shadowy figure approaches. She awakens in a cold basement, bound and dressed in unfamiliar clothes, an oversized t-shirt and silky boxers with a red ribbon tied around her thigh, like the murdered girl's.
Water becomes both literal and metaphorical threat as Jordan drags her to a laundry basin, paralleling her childhood trauma of near drowning by a protector. Horror compounds when she discovers Lila Chambers' severed head at the basin's bottom, a trophy from Jordan's previous victim. As he repeatedly submerges her head, water filling her lungs mirrors how trauma floods the mind. Her mother's voice emerges in these liminal moments, pulling toward death or fighting for her life. Regaining consciousness, she witnesses a tattooed man in a plague doctor mask, Mr. Cade, methodically torturing Jordan. He transforms from potential savior to something more complex as he enacts brutal vengeance, stabbing, severing digits and tongue, disemboweling him alive. Jordan's plea that he didn't know she was mine reveals she's caught between two predators. Yet rather than just terror, she feels drawn to Mr. Cade's darkness. When he admits voices directed him to her, she recognizes a kindred brokenness and begs to leave with him. 3 weeks after her rescue, our protagonist draws a scarred, tattooed angel with copper eyes and shadowed wings, with a small bumblebee nearby. This art reveals her romanticization of Mr. Cade's violence, recasting a killer as an avenging angel. When asked if she believes in angels, she simply states, "No, but I believe he exists." Hidden sketches expose her intensifying obsession. Her disturbing sexual fantasies about him, covered in blood, demonstrate how violence and desire have intertwined in her psyche. Rather than processing the horror, she's incorporated it into attraction, mirroring abuse cycles. By keeping silent, she isolates herself with distorted perceptions. The novella ends with her sensing Mr. Cade nearby. Her smile and the title Philia suggest she perceives a connection based on shared brokenness. The ending disturbs by subverting expectations. There's no rescue from darkness or realization of danger.
Instead, she embraces what threatens her, finding perverse comfort that normal life never provided. Music functions as both metaphor and narrative device throughout the story. The playlist featuring Nine Inch Nails, Muse, and Eminem with Sia deepens psychological complexity rather than merely setting atmosphere. Nine Inch Nails' industrial soundscapes mirror trauma's repetitive nature, while Muse's orchestral rock captures psychological distortions. Eminem and Sia's Beautiful Pain directly addresses the paradoxical attraction to suffering driving the narrative. The playlist serves as a soundtrack to the protagonist's fractured mental state. Driving rhythms match her perceptual distortions, while melodic elements reflect her yearning for connection despite her damage. These musical references connect the novella to youth culture, suggesting the protagonist's extreme experiences exist on a continuum with common adolescent struggles with identity and emotional regulation. The prose employs rhythmic techniques, creating a reading experience similar to a musical composition. Quiet introspection gives way to cacophonous violence. Repetitive thoughts circle like motifs, building toward crescendos before resolving into the unsettling final note of the protagonist's smile. The protagonist and Mr. Cade connect not through healthy attraction, but through mutual brokenness. Both hear voices, see things others don't, and bear physical and psychological scars. When she confesses her hallucinations, she seeks validation. His response, showing the throat scar from his attempt to silence voices, creates an intimate moment of shared suffering. This exchange forms a bond deeper than conventional attraction, suggesting that recognition of one's damage can create profound, if unhealthy, connections. Her gift of the bumblebee barrette, a token from her mother, symbolizes transferring attachment from one destructive relationship to another. She entrusts him with her vulnerability, creating an intimacy built on shared damage rather than growth. Their parting, with his vague promise to see her around, establishes an unequal power dynamic where he controls their connection while she waits, mirroring abusive relationships where unpredictability strengthens attachment. This relationship subverts redemption narratives. Rather than healing either character, trauma permanently alters their perception of love, leading them to seek relationships that reinforce their damage. In a world demanding proper trauma recovery, Phobia reveals a darker truth. Some wounds permanently alter our perception of danger, desire, and connection. The protagonist journeys not toward conventional healing, but toward finding someone who accepts, even celebrates, her distortions. When judging post-trauma attachments, we overlook how these connections serve deep psychological needs. The protagonist seeks not safety, but recognition of her brokenness, someone who understands the voices in her head because he hears them too. Trauma rewires desire itself, creating attraction to what should repel us. In her charcoal angel with copper eyes, the protagonist finds meaning in suffering, not healing, but purpose. Her smile at Mr. Cade's presence isn't recovery, but discovery of someone who makes her damage feel like belonging. The question becomes whether any of us truly understand how trauma reshapes the heart, creating hungers conventional wisdom cannot satisfy. Sometimes the monsters we fear become the only ones who truly see us.